Good day from Wall Street. This is Jack Marks for Wall Street Reporter. And today I am speaking with Roger Tung. He is the CEO of Concert Pharmaceuticals. Stock symbol on NASDAQ is CNCE. Roger, welcome.
Jack, it's great to be here. Thanks for speaking with me.
Absolutely. Roger, so it looks like Concert has really an interesting pipeline of potential drugs, and especially you have your alopecia drug in development, which is getting a lot of attention. Before we cover that, can you tell us about your unique the deuterium platform? If I'm pronouncing it right, and how it works, and what differentiates it from other types of approaches to drug discovery, and how that's driving your whole development strategy.
Sure, happy to. So deuterium is a very specific kind of technology that is different from other types of approaches to drug discovery. So what we do is to start with molecules that we know have biological activity in humans, and oftentimes they're either approved drugs or other compounds that are well studied. And what we do is to selectively replace certain of the hydrogen atoms in those drugs with deuterium atoms. And deuterium is a heavy, stable form of hydrogen that's present in the environment, and all of us have deuterium in our body, but it's typically very, very dilute, parts per million kind of dilute. And what we do is put it in a very highly concentrated form into the drug molecules that we're making. And in certain select cases, that can change the properties of the drugs in ways that can make them better suited for treating the diseases of interest. For instance, we've been able to show that in some cases it can make the drugs last significantly longer in the body. In other cases, we've been shown that that we can substantially reduce apparent toxicity with the drugs and have the potential to make them safer. So we try to concentrate on situations where we can improve the safety or efficacy of drugs. Now, the interesting thing about deuterium replacement is that it doesn't change the intrinsic biochemical activity of compounds. So if you start with a drug with a known kind of biological activity, you have high confidence that with deuterium substitution, it's going to retain the same activity to the extent that it's a result of exposure to the parent compound. What does change is the way that the body breaks down that compound, and that has the results on the safety and efficacy side that I talked about.
So essentially, you're taking existing compounds, and you're making them, I guess, what you're basically improving the safety and efficacy. Is that the idea?
That is the approach that we're trying to take. So, for instance, the alopecia drug that you spoke about is one that what we call CTP-543, and it's a deuterium-modified version of a marketed drug called ruxolitinib or Jakafi. And ruxolitinib has been shown to have some efficacy in the treatment of alopecia areata, but what we've done is to show that by selective deuterium substitution, we can make the drug more stable and have a significantly longer half-life without changing what's called the Cmax, or the maximum concentration that it has in the body, which is important because for this drug, safety and maximal concentrations are related. And efficacy, we believe, is a result of how long it lasts in the body. So what we're trying to do is to create a compound that we hope to have better efficacy without a decrease in safety.
Okay, so it's interesting. I'm looking at your investor presentation, and you have some pictures of kind of the before and after with the treatment that's in trials. Somebody's completely bald, and was it a couple of weeks later, or is it 20 weeks? They have a full head of hair. So it's what's so There's an existing treatment out there, and essentially you're making it, I guess, what, more powerful and at the same time more safe?
So I should start out by saying that there's no approved treatments for alopecia areata, and we hope to be actually the first on the market for this disease. Let me back up just a little bit and say a little bit about alopecia areata. This is a autoimmune disease. It's not like male pattern baldness or something that is, say, age-related. This is a disease that specifically results from the infiltration of certain immune cells called T cells into the hair follicle, where they cause an inflammatory reaction, and as a result, the hair is lost from the follicle. Now, what we found is that this specific deuterium-modified drug, CTP-543, has the ability to have a very specific kind of suppression of this T-cell-mediated response, resulting in patients who have even very severe cases of alopecia areata, as you mentioned, individuals who have lost all of the hair on their head, their eyelashes, their ear and nose hair, and their body. We've been able to show that some of those individuals have remarkable responses and were able to have very robust regrowth of hair within a six-month period. So what I mentioned is that there was a small academic study with a very high dose, or a significantly higher dose, I should say, of the drug ruxolitinib. We then modified that drug to create the new compound, CTP-543, which is a novel composition of matter, an NCE, as they say in the business. And this NCE has differentiated clinical properties, and that's what we're studying right now and trying to bring to approval as the first compound for the treatment of this disease.
Okay, interesting. And so the ruxolitinib, excuse my butchering the name, is that an existing drug, or is that what is that?
It is an existing drug that's used for the treatment of certain blood disorders. It's a very expensive drug. Its wholesale price is about $150,000 a year. And what we're trying to do is to create a modified version of that compound that could be studied in an appropriate population and priced appropriately for the treatment of this autoimmune skin disease.
Okay, so basically it's not used for alopecia. It's used for some blood disorders right now.
That's correct.
The base comp. Okay, so what's the so you're in phase two clinical trials right now, right?
We are.
Okay, what's the kind of, maybe if you could talk about, you know, the size of the market opportunity, and you know, then we can go into some of the recent clinical results.
Right. So the epidemiology of alopecia areata is only somewhat understood. It's generally accepted that it's a pretty significant lifetime risk of having alopecia areata at some point in your life. And the estimates for that range between about 1.7 to 2.1% of the population. We think it's probably around 2% of the population will have alopecia areata at some point in their life. Now, for the more severe forms of it that we're working with, which we're studying individuals who have lost 50% or more of their scalp hair, which is a pretty severe case, we don't have as good figures, but we think that there's a significant portion of that 2% of the population. And our estimates are that it is quite a substantial market. We haven't released any specific estimates, but I think generally among people who have looked at this field, they believe it is a billion or multi-billion dollar market for the population in the U.S. alone.
Okay, and maybe if you can talk about some of the recent clinical trials and kind of bring us up to date on that.
Sure. Well, we're running, as you mentioned, a phase two clinical study, and we're studying three different doses of the drug, 4, 8, and 12 milligrams, each of them dosed twice daily. And we have completed the first two-thirds of that, the 4 and the 8 milligram twice daily dosed groups versus placebo. And we're now running the last group, which is 12 milligrams twice daily, and that is fully enrolled and should read out in the third quarter of this year. Now, we've unblinded, or partially unblinded, I should say, the first two doses, the 4 and 8 milligram dose groups, which were completed. And that's the pictures that you were referring to, which are available on our website, www.concertpharma.com, in the investor section. And what you can see is that we have had statistically significant results with the 8 milligram twice daily dose group. And we had numerically but not statistically significant improvements with the 4 milligram twice daily group. So we're now rounding out the study with our high dose group, 12 milligrams twice daily. And based on that information and another study that we're running in parallel, which is a once daily versus twice daily study, we hope to approach FDA in an end of phase two meeting and then begin preparations for phase three studies.
Okay. And are there any side effects?
So far, the drug has been quite well tolerated. There were no serious adverse effects in the 4 and the 8 milligram dose groups. And of course, we're studying the 12 right now. But we're pleased to see that so far it looks pretty benign. We'll obviously have to see how this plays out when we get a better look at a larger population. And I should say that we haven't fully unblinded the data, so I can't give you very specific information right now, but we are not seeing anything that deters us from carrying out further studies in larger populations.
Okay. And so at what point, time-wise, at what point would you expect to get into phase three?
Well, our hope is to be in phase three next year. Clearly, what we'll need to do is to confer with FDA and get their advice on what their expectations are in terms of trial design and population size and so forth. But we've had a very productive interaction with them to date, and so we're looking forward, hopefully next year, to launching into our phase three studies and continuing to be one of the leaders in getting a compound and hopefully the first to market.
Okay. And so assuming everything works as planned, how far off would commercialization be?
We're not giving any guidance on that yet because we haven't conferred with FDA, and I think until we have some better specifics from them on their expectation for the patient population size and trial design, it's a little premature for us to provide that.
Okay, fair enough. So I think, and you have two other drugs right now in the pipeline, right?
We do. So the compound which is the furthest along is AVP-786, and this is a compound, AVP-786 contains a compound that we licensed initially to a company called Avanir Pharmaceuticals. And Avanir was acquired by Otsuka, which is a large Japanese company, largely in order to gain access to AVP-786. And that was a pretty large acquisition. It was a $3.5 billion acquisition that took place a number of years ago. And Otsuka has continued to develop the compound, which is now nearing the readout of its first phase three pivotal trial. And that should be available in the coming months. They have recently completed dosing in the study, and we believe in 2 or 3 months, in that kind of time frame, there will be a readout on that phase 3 pivotal study. And this is for an indication which is agitation in patients with dementia due to Alzheimer's disease. And it's another situation where there are no approved medicines for the indication. We think that there's a very large, very evident need for treatment of that indication. And if it is approved, we hope and expect it to be a quite substantial indication, which we will share in with some of the royalties from the program as well as milestones.
Okay.
So I should say that the approval of the study, the approval of the drug will be based on two phase 3 studies, the one that's in the first one that's now clinically completed, and the second one, which is scheduled to be completed in December of this year.
Okay. So in December of 2019, you're going to be completing the phase 3 trial.
Otsuka will be completing.
Excuse me, Otsuka. Okay. And so they've licensed it. And what are the royalties that you'd be getting from any commercial sales?
So we have royalties in the mid-single to low double-digit percentage. And this is a program that we licensed at the preclinical stage, so it was pretty early. But due to the very substantial market opportunity here that we think exists, this could be very meaningful in just in terms of the economic impact on our company.
Okay. Well, like, can you get into some numbers?
Well,
if you feel comfortable.
We haven't released any specifics. I know that there were some estimates made by Otsuka and Avenir during the course of their merger, and they were suggesting that this would be a blockbuster indication. We basically agree with that.
Okay. So blockbuster meaning, billion plus sales?
Billion plus, yeah.
Okay. And you'd be getting single to low double digit royalty on that?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Finally you have the schizophrenia drug, right?
That's right. So that's a pretty exciting program that we have. So the background of this is that all of the approved schizophrenia compounds act on a neurotransmitter system, which is one specific system called the dopamine system. And for decades now, there's been the belief that there's another neurotransmitter called glutamate, which is also responsible for many of the symptoms of schizophrenia, alterations in that neurologic pathway. And for the glutamate system to operate in humans optimally, you have to have another chemical transmitter that's called D-serine. And D-serine acts as a co-transmitter with glutamate in certain portions of the brain which are altered in patients who have schizophrenia. And it's known that in individuals with schizophrenia, they have low levels of D-serine in their blood and also in their what's called cerebrospinal fluid, or the fluid that drains from the brain. So there's indications that they're deficient in that neurotransmitter. And there's also been some academic studies showing that if you give oral D-serine to patients with schizophrenia, that it increases their blood levels, and they appear to have a positive response to that across a range of symptoms. Now, the reason that D-serine has never been developed is, in significant part, we believe, because there is very well described literature showing that in non-human species that the drug can cause severe toxicity to the kidneys. And so, of course, it's not something that you'd really want to be giving a lot of to people. What we found is that pretty remarkably, by doing a selective deuterium substitution of D-serine, we were able to make an analog of the compound that did not have those symptoms of kidney toxicity in the animal studies that D-serine itself does. So our compound, CTP-692, has, we hope, the potential to have the positive effects of correcting this neurotransmitter deficiency without the risk of toxicity that is potentially there with D-serine itself. So a rather different kind of a story than some others that we work on, but one that we think could be very exciting because it could be an entirely new way of treating schizophrenia, and there is a great need for new therapies, particularly differentiated therapies that treat a different axis of the disease.
Okay, and this, so right now this is still what? This is in the phase one trials?
This is in phase one. We are going to be carrying out, we're in the process for carrying out a single ascending dose, multiple ascending dose and food effect study on CTP-692, and our plan is to initiate phase two with it by the end of the year.
Okay. So how can you kind of tell us about your drug development, the strategy? It looks like you're going after all these different indications. How do you go about choosing which to go after?
Well, we're really focused on treating unmet medical needs. So we look for situations where there are serious diseases, where we think that compounds that we developed with deuterium technology have an ability to have a real impact. And you've heard first-in-class being a theme through these different molecules that I've talked about. First to use this new neurotransmitter approach, first to treat agitation symptoms in Alzheimer's disease, first to treat autoimmune hair loss or alopecia areata. And our hope is to have compounds where deuterium creates a significant differentiation from the previous compound, but is able to piggyback on known functionality of the compound clinically so that we reduce the clinical risk of failure.
Okay. Roger, can you share with us your background and also some of the other key members of your team?
Sure. Well, I'm happy to say that a number of the key members of the team are people that I've worked with for quite a few years. Our Chief Operating Officer, Nancy Stewart, was the head of development in a program where I was head of research at one point, and that was with HIV protease inhibitors quite some years back. We both went our various ways and then ended up back here at Concert. Let's see, Justine, who you know as our head of IR, also is somebody that I've worked with at Vertex Pharmaceuticals some years ago. I was one of the founding scientists there back at its origin, and eventually ended up as vice president of drug discovery and involved in cystic fibrosis, HIV, HCV, and a number of other programs that that we worked on there. So we have expertise in drug development with Jim Casella, who has a background actually in developing schizophrenia drugs. So that's really his wheelhouse there. Mark Becker, our chief financial officer, has a long history in the industry, including at Genzyme and at CRISPR Therapeutics. And let's see, Bob Silverman, who is heading the legal team, is somebody who has been in the industry for quite a while at Millennium, at Vertex, and at some other companies. So it's a very highly experienced team. We've seen a lot of drugs make it from concept to market. And we're excited about the opportunity that we have at Concert.
Okay. Roger, what's your vision for Concert Pharmaceutical, Concert Pharmaceuticals, excuse me, 2, 3 years out, what will the company look like?
Well, we have the potential to be either late stage or completed in our clinical evaluation of CTP-543, in the years to come. I think that could be a really exciting compound, again, first-in-class treatment for a disease state which affects hundreds of thousands of people in the U.S. We estimate roughly 500,000 plus minus. We have the potential to have late-stage clinical data on the schizophrenia compound, CTP-692, and we're excited about the potential for that compound in other indications as well. So we may study it more broadly. We have a technology which is proven to be fruitful in terms of its ability to create a lot of different kinds of opportunities. We hope that AVP-786 will be on the market and fulfilling its potential as a treatment for one of the cardinal symptoms of Alzheimer's disease. So there's a lot to look forward to.
Okay, Roger. Last question is, in your opinion, what are the key value drivers, the top three reasons investors should consider your stock today?
Well, I think we're heading into quite a few inflection points related to our pipeline. Really, the compounds that I mentioned today, AVP-786 being one of the first up, and the potential with the other compounds. I should also mention that we had actually sold a program to Vertex Pharmaceuticals, which was a cystic fibrosis compound for which we received $160 million in upfront payment, but we also have $90 million in additional potential milestones from that. And it's our belief that Vertex is working quite hard to move the compound forward, and our expectation is that we will achieve those milestones in due course. And that's $50 million milestone for approval in the U.S. and a $40 million milestone for pricing and reimbursement agreement in the first of either England, the U.K., Germany, or France. And Vertex has already demonstrated in a phase two study that the compound that we licensed, or actually, I should say that we transacted with them and that they now own, which is called VX-561, is quite active in the treatment of cystic fibrosis, and will have we believe, a more convenient dosing paradigm than the compounds that they're currently either marketing or have in development. Furthermore, because of the arrangement that they have with us and with the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation, they have indicated that they'll be able to reduce royalty payments as a result of developing 561. So we think that they have every incentive to take it forward. So there's another example of the use of the technology and a discerning buyer with Vertex.
Okay, well, sounds very exciting. So, Roger, on that note, I want to thank you, and we look forward to hearing more from you in the months ahead.
Great. Well, thanks again for taking the time to speak with us. Got a lot of exciting stuff going.
Thank you.